Well, welcome, everybody. Did you enjoy the weather today? Or is it just me? Some of you like it a lot hotter. This is good. This is really good to me. Especially we had 90s early on. I was really scared. I thought I might have to move. So I'm thankful that San Diego sent some our way. Last week, a lot of people were gone. Father's Day last week. We did a series, or started a series, just kind of an introduction, some thoughts on this concept of play, and then we're going to carry it through the summer where we look at different aspects of play, such as literature, movies, our eating and food, communing together, our pets, our animals. We're going to look at all those things that probably usually aren't talked about in church. They're not sometimes thought of as holy as other things. But we talked about how the beginning of our story in Genesis tells us that humans were designed to walk and talk with God, to play with God, to be at ease without shame, just reveling in the joy of God play in the garden. And then there was a problem. With the fall, we went from a play paradigm thought process to a work. It's toil. It's hard. We don't like it. But if you and I are to live as we were created to be, then we have to seek to return to this lost art of play. We were created for garden life. We were made to play with God in the tending and the tilling of the soil, of the shepherding the world. And what we find is that Jesus, as the second Adam, came because we started this game of hide and seek with God. And Jesus came to play a different game, seek and save the lost, and to lead us back into this natural garden habitat of playing with God in the world. And what we find out that God's garden is playful, not workful. It's full of play. And so part of delighting in God, I think this is a really important series, because part of delighting and knowing God is not embracing the world's work fetish, but the garden's playground. I think a metaphor in my mind, we said last week, was moving from a Protestant work ethic to a paradise play ethic. There's a difference, a big difference in those. I'm kind of just going off my overheads from last week, just trying to bring you up to speed a little bit. But I think in this series, this is a call, and I like this image, to rediscover and to relive the garden story of strolling with God through his world. Strolling with God through paradise. And I really liked this image from last week, yoked with Jesus, because the yoke of Christ isn't some heavy burden. It's designed to make everything easier and shared and playful and creative. Moving even in our work, we're talking about play specifically, but even in our work, even in the difficulties, there's a sense of ease and freedom, and it's with Christ. There's a lover's bond here. It isn't some kind of heavy burden on our shoulders. And then we also said God's spirit has been released to play in the world, and his playful presence is always communicating to us the very good of God's creation, and it's found in art, and it's found in literature, and it's found in movies and music and play and parks and recreation. Yes, that is a TV show. But all of those things are, think of that, God is in you, and God is all around you, and the two are always trying to come together. And I love that phrase from this song. You know how you sing a song a million times, and last week it like hit me? Like, I love that phrase now. That song kind of got old, because as a kid, I was always in church and heard these kind of slow hymns moving along. But that phrase meant something else. God is in you, God is around you, and the Spirit is always trying to tune your heart to sing God's praise and grace. I like that. And we talked about just the joy of seeing, like, the sacred art of seeing what is right in front of you. This culture is very restless. We always feel like we have to move, we have to have this job, we have to have this much in the bank account, then this will happen, then this. And it's always this, instead of saying, no, your backyard can become God's garden. Your backyard, your job, your neighborhood, right where you are, Christ is there moving. How do you stroll with him and allow your own setting and station in life to become God's garden? And then we kind of ended with this. It was hard to see. It didn't come out quite like I thought, but if you see that right corner, you see three people kind of in a twirl dancing. And we ended by saying, last week that we were not created for the utilitarian purpose of getting work done. That's other creation stories, but we were created from the fruit of God's own love, just because of his utter delight. Let me ask you, is this the way that we usually wake up and engage the world? Like, the whole universe sprang from his eternal joy and delight because he wanted to. Is that how we function in this world? So, I'm going to come back to that. Tonight, we're going to look at this. I wish I could do that, by the way. I don't think I can, so I'm not even going to try. That's bad, I know. We should try, but, you know, I like looking at him do it. Looks really good that way. But we're going to look at this, how play, is a foretaste of glory divine. Remember that song growing up, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Another good line. So let me ask you this. I think sometimes when I say this, I'll go back for a second. When I talk about this, I think, I might be wrong, some of you just kind of shake your head and say, that's Shane's theology, that's the way he thinks. I like it when he says it. I mean, I'm here, it's inspiring. But do we own this? That the whole of the universe springs from God's fun and joy and delight. I want to help you own that a little bit more. Let me ask you this. Why is there something instead of nothing? Do you ever ask those philosophical questions? Why is my friend, my buddy, I remember one day he just looked over at me and goes, why do we think cocker spaniels are cute and adorable and we think cockroaches are grotesque? What if it were the opposite? And, you know, this was just normal day for this guy. No. So why is there something instead of nothing? If God is a free, self-sufficient being, why does he create the universe? And remember this verse from last week. Wisdom is personified in Proverbs 8, and it says, I was the craftsman at his side at creation. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world, and delighting in humankind. So that is the wisdom of creation. Notice the balance. Not taking life too seriously and not taking life too lightly. The image popped from, not Atlas with this heavy weight on his shoulders, but more like a child spinning a globe in awe and wonder. Which makes us ask the question, could God have created this world with all of its wonderful creatures out of pure pleasure? Could he have put all of this into play because of joy unspeakable? G.K. Chesterton says, do it again. He keeps creating something. The daisies all look the same because God never grows old or tired of it. He says, do it again. See? Could he have done it because he looks and he does it and says, what fun? Did God approach the creation with the excitement and the imagination of an artist, desiring to create something good and beautiful and true and yet fun? A universe that can grow and emerge and it has potential and it also has freedom. Which, if all that's true, then could our play mirror the original intent of creation for the fun of it? Could our play mirror the character of the creator? Notice this. Creation and play, just be a little bit philosophical for a moment. Creation and play have something in common. Both activities are meaningful, but not necessary. Right? Creation's obviously meaningful. But your play is meaningful to you as well, but they're not necessary. Like, God didn't need to create the universe any more than you need to go in the backyard and play croquet. It's not necessary. Now, God's playing and our playing are different because God can create out of nothing, which brings him great delight. Man can only play with something, right? We can only play in relationship to other people and things. But do you see that? Just like creation, our play, our games are an expression of freedom. We want to. And the pleasure of the player mirrors the pleasure of the creator in his creation. That's where it comes from. You ever thought of this? Just like creation, our games, our play are like a world in and of themselves. Like you get lost, they almost create their own worlds because games are a lot like life. You have sincerity at moments. You have euphoria at moments. You have suspense. Who's going to win? What's this player going to do? You have relaxation. Sometimes you have pain as you get older after playing. But it was still fun. It was worth it. But you also have freedom. So it's like games are almost like a mini life built in at once. But does that stay with you? We were created in joy, that dance, those three people in a circle, and we were created for joy. And enjoying God in his creation is part of why we were created in the first place. I actually think this is one way we communicate the gospel. I hear people all the time in this culture say, I just want to be happy. I just want my kids to be happy. I just want my family to be happy. And what if we could say, well, what if settling for happiness is actually falling far short of the joy you were created for? Because happiness is one thing. Joy is a different ballgame altogether. What if you go to those early pages in Genesis and you find that creation mandate that says, fill the world and subdue it. Tend to and care for this. And what if you don't see that as a harsh reprimand? Like, come on, humans, get bit. You got to work. You've got to produce. You better be good at something. And what if instead our work, our doing, our coming and going, all of that is understood in a context of play and joy? Like, these are big what if. What if we were made to whistle while we work? You know? Not merely always enjoying the labor and the work itself, but remembering that we are more than our work. We're greater than our task. We are created in the image of this joyful God. What if, like, see, I feel like sometimes in my own heart, I don't believe this. Like, what if the one who came that said, I have come to bring life and life in all of its abundance, what if he really was the incarnation of God? What if he really was here to show us God's heart and God's intentions and God's dreams and God's very inner world? And what if God's exuberance and zest in creating life is something that he means to share with us as well? The early church had this. You want to talk about the glory of God? We sometimes talk about the glory of God and we mean the holiness of God, seriousness of God. Now, the early church said the glory of God is man and woman fully alive. The glory of God is joy in our existence. Our fondness for life, being good receivers of the gifts of God. Delighting in the beauties all around us. And when you do that, that is actually a share in the infinite pleasure of the Creator. You're on vacation, you stop and take picture of flowers and you see mountains. I'm always getting out to take pictures of river. I love running water. Whatever it is, your delight is a share in the infinite pleasure of the Creator. In that moment, his heart beats in you. You're feeling it to some degree. I think it might be even more intense on the other end. But you see how play will challenge our over-seriousness about life. And it will fill us with delight that we can carry over then to the other parts of our existence, our work, sometimes things that we don't want to do. But all of this is a belief, right? It comes from a belief in a restored humanity. That we believe that there's an end. We believe that there's future. We believe that there's more. Like, this is just the beginning. So let me ask you, when was the last time you heard a sermon about the theological importance of play? Like we said last week, I'll go back to that. Play isn't just a pause in your life that you're human, so you've got to stop, and it refreshes you, and then you're just thrust back into the busyness of work. Play is good for its own sake. There's something about play, apart from just rest from work, that reminds us we're not human doings. We're not just about doing, producing, creating things. We're about being. We're about celebrating existence. We're about being able to laugh at ourselves. So when was the last time we heard about the theological importance of play? Like, what do rest and money and eating and sex and leisure, what does this have to do and how does it connect to the kingdom of God? I mean, these things take up most of our life, correct? We spend most of our life doing, so if they're outside, again, the category of sacred for us, there's a deep issue. All these things we spend so much of our life doing, but they receive so little attention from a biblical point of view. Last week we noted that actually playfulness and holiness are inseparable things. So however in your mind you delineate, this is what a disciple of Jesus looks like. Like this is a holy person. Like this is a person who really follows after God and has his heart. Playfulness should be a part of that. Godliness, to be godlike, is to be full of joy. So if Christians lose their desire for play or their interest in playing, then the Bible would say you're moving away from rather than towards becoming like a child, and it's children who inherit the kingdom. You see that? So this isn't like a, well, I'm just more serious and more working. No. Jesus would say to you, if play isn't part of your humanity, then you're moving away from becoming like a child. And those are the ones who inherit the kingdom. So from a Christian perspective, rejecting play, acting as if like that's just something frivolous for people that got time on their hands, you know, it's a sign of immaturity almost, some people's view, then that lacks wisdom. Since God rested and since he took delight in what he created and he stood back and just absorbed it and enjoyed it, it is now possible to think of play as a theological category. Like play is imitation of God. Does that make sense? That is, play is imitation of the divine. So one of the clues that play is a proper theological category, right, is that clearly God has a sense of humor. You ever look at what God has created here? Looked at yourself? At us? Ever looked at that? Huh? This is just common. I could go on real weird with animals. These are just common, like, seen a pelican? I mean, that ain't right. You know? How about that? And my eyes, woo. Pretty far apart. How about those? I mean, look at that night. Look at that body, that neck, and then that little wee head. I fed one time. That was not pleasant. That tongue wrapped all the way around my arm. And the food was like here. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Felt like my arm was leaving me. This one, man, these guys are not smart. Their brains are pea-sized, and it matters how big your brain is, and they are not intelligent creatures at all. I mean, you got to go, why, you know? Carrie and I like this, beluga whales. They look like a dolphin with a brain on steroids, you know? Our kids would get so mad when we go to zoos because we'll stand for out, look at them. And they're like, come on, we've seen them. So these are creatures that God has made, and I think that they are just meant to produce laughter and joy by the way that they look. I mean, ostrich, what is he doing? What is he accomplishing? I don't think a lot. And you can also read the parables of Jesus and recognize that Jesus had a sense of humor and a sense of play. I mean, to imagine the camel trying to do the limbo through the eye of a needle is to realize that even the serious business of entering the kingdom has a comical, playful side for Jesus. I mean, think of that. He's talking about serious business of what it is to enter the kingdom, and even in that, he's got kind of like this Saturday Night Live skit of this camel, huge mammoth camel, trying to dance through the eye of a needle. So let's end with this thought tonight. I think that play, beyond just being childlike, is also an eschatological activity. Ooh, pulled out the big guns. I said eschatological. See, so play is to make us like little children. So all of a sudden you're like a little child, and Jesus says it's children that begin to understand and enter and play in the kingdom, right? So it does that for sure. But I also think play is an eschatological activity. Here's what I mean. Play is a form of celebration of life, right? And as such, it celebrates in advance the joy and the excitement of the new creation. Or we could say the recreation of the world. I say recreation because have you ever thought recreation and recreation kind of look alike, don't they? It's celebrating in advance the recreation of the world, which tells you this can't be all there is. Your joy here is pointing to even something greater than that. I love theologian names. I sometimes want to change my name a little bit. German theologian Jürgen Moltmann. Yeah, like that. I say Jürgen, you say, yeah, tomato, tomato. I've met him is all I've said. He didn't correct me, so it's all I'm saying. Maybe he's too nice. But Jürgen Moltmann says that in playing, we anticipate our liberation, a time when we will study war no more, and a time when we shed all those things that inhibit or alienate us from real life. Man, that's a great thought. Like play is the sense of when you're free to do as you please, and there's no more war, and there's just not this over-seriousness anymore, all those things that would inhibit you from real life. Why? Because play is foreshadowing the joy of the eschaton, the end. It's a foreshadow of the joy that is to come when all the drudgery and death and decay and disease are gone. So play is quite rightly seen as a celebration of life, and it's a picture of life lived to its fullest, its fastest, its highest without any limits. Ever thought your hobbies, the things that you enjoy building, our games, our recreation, our desire for vacation, our competition, all of that fuels a theology of hope for the future. That's what it does. So play is not in any shape or form a useless activity. Some people would say, oh, play is just escape from reality and we got to get back to the real world of work. No, no, no. It's a momentary escape into a future reality that God intends for everybody. That's what play is. It foreshadows a better day when things will go right. Ever had one of those days where you just go, man, it just clicked today. Ice Cube said that. Today is a good day. Has that ever happened? Like, so that foreshadows a better day when things will go right. And what play is, we're saying that's worth celebrating now because that foreshadowing of the future actually is a foretaste of better things right now. And that really is the theological function of play. That really is its purpose. Ever thought of this? No matter how hard you try to squelch the freedom that comes with play, it crops up. So think of people under political regimes where, you know, under communism, play doesn't, but it did. It cropped up. Think of people in really poor, hard, difficult circumstances. Think back in the days, people played stickball in New York streets. Play will arise. Think of, you can see this all over the world. Muddy fields, no goals, kids playing poorest villages in Africa. I love this picture. That's awesome. What I got, I'm gonna make it work. Like it appears to me that God made us to play. You can try to stamp that out. But play in its best moments is perspective, where you can see a little bit difference with rest because rest is more like retrospective. So think, God looked back on his work week and then he rested. And play is prospective in that when we play, when we're enjoying life, that is a foreshadowing of the future. Friends, you and I are increasingly playing with the future in order to get to know it. We are doing the future now to the degree that we can so that it isn't such a shock to the system when it arrives. We're increasingly trying to get to know the future. It's something like this, because here's a picture of the future. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into prunes. Weapons of warfare are turning into tools of cultivation. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Everyone will sit under their own vine and under their own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid. You ever thought of this? People play war games, and when they do, they are foreshadowing and preparing for the future. And what we're saying is normal games do that as well. Our community, our play, your hobbies, that's a foretaste of what we hope for, right? Of what we yearn and long for. War games kind of do the opposite. But end with this. Think of, for a moment, the sacredness of play. Think of this, say, what makes, say, play sacred, because we don't usually think of those terms together. So think of the sacred dimension of play. This is the last time I'll ask you to be philosophical tonight. It's not too deep, though. But play is sacred in that it points to something outside itself. Like, it's bigger than just the moment and the joy you're having. It points to something outside itself, but get this, it also participates in that transcendent thing to which it points. Does that make sense? So play is bigger than itself. It points, it's sacred because it points to something beyond itself, but you're also in that moment participating in that very transcendent thing that it's pointing to. You're participating in the future. So that way, your play, all that we're going to talk about in the next couple weeks, play is more than just a sign, but it's actually a symbol of the future where you are participating now in advance what it is pointing to, which is God's dreams in the end. Ever had this moment where you're just lost in play, or you're lost wood, whatever it is you do, whatever your hobby, and it can actually bring you to ecstasy? What's happening there? You are transcending your self-focus, which is usually there, right? And for a moment, you are self-forgetful. And when you are self-forgetful, guess what? Joy can sneak in. That's why C.S. Lewis said, surprised by joy. When you're lost in this transcendent moment and it's just bringing you joy and there's ecstasy, all of a sudden real joy, God's joy, sneaks in the back door because you've forgotten yourself. You're stepping outside for a moment that taken for granted nature of everyday life, and you're opening yourselves to something more, something other, something bigger than yourself. So I would leave you with that play suggests to us the full possibilities of what can be. You're outside playing volleyball or something, all of a sudden that's showing you what can be in the future. Like, it is a hint of what it means to be really alive, what it means to be fully human. What would it look like if we were all on the same team playing towards the same end? Imagine that in our political climate. We were all on the same end playing towards the same goal. So in that way, friends, you and I, we usher in God's future. Or we could at least say this, we at least let the world know that his future is coming by the way we live now in joy, spontaneously, generous, unselfish. It's just like, as you do that, you're just like freely at play. There's an ease, there's a freedom, there's a being yoked and connected to Jesus, and the world sees that, and that is a sign to them that says, hey, the future's coming, and the future is already here. And you can be a part of that. I just kind of want to show you some images, but we're done. And then we'll start going each from Bruce. Now, please remember, July 2nd, so now this is on the recording. July 2nd, we don't have church. We have church this Tuesday night. So usually we have church Sunday, and then we have a group Tuesday night that eats a meal. We're not going to do church next week because people have been gone. Like last week, we were very, very tiny. And it's a July 4th weekend, so we're saying we're not going to try to fight that. We will meet Tuesday, so if you want to join us there, we'll have a meal starting at 6:30, and then I have a good friend of mine lead us in a great, so it'll be a little bit like a service there, a gathering at the barn Tuesday night. So you're welcome to join us there, and then July 2nd, we won't be here. Then Bruce will come back and talk about literature. I'm going to hit movies. I believe Liesl is going to talk about food. I believe Peggy, we're putting people on the spot now. I think Peggy's going to talk about animals, horses, but she's got to cover dogs because we have a congregation of dog lovers here. We won't mention cats too much, but don't. Oh, yeah, she's asking that you would send pictures, too, because she'd like to incorporate that in. So if you got family photos with your pet. Some of you do. Don't even laugh. I know that for a fact. Please send those to her. Let me take us out this way. When we play this summer, when we go on vacation, you know as you do that, there will be another time of play in the kingdom. And you know this because life has swallowed up death. So the reason we talk about this is that the Christian, you can rejoice. If you believe this, you can rejoice and you can play the game of new creation knowing that it has already begun in Christ. And that one day you're going to look and be just like him. And to me, part of the good news of that is that God will bring that about. I read so much Christian literature that I think is slanted this way, where it's about you do that. We're going to change the world. This is what I hear constantly. We're going to change the world. No, you're not. You're not going. The printing press changed the world. I mean, that's kind of world-changing power. You're not. You can change people around you. You can change yourself. You can change the environment around you. And in some bigger sense, yes, that changes the world. But we use big language. And I would remind us, it will be the lion of the tribe of Judah that brings about the new creation, not us. And there's actually good news in that because it doesn't come through human achievement or accomplishment. Like when you hear that, that doesn't put that heavy weight on, oh, we gotta be better, we gotta get out and do this. No, 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 it's not going to be accomplished by human work. I love that. It'll happen through the lion of the tribe of Judah. And so now play and celebration are actually closer to the character of the new creation in many ways than work is. See that? There's an ease of like, yeah, you contribute. You're part of that. What you do matters, certainly. We don't want to go too far the other way. What you do certainly contributes, but he will bring this about, and there's a rest in that, isn't there? He will do it. Because it ain't looking good on our end, I got to say. It feels like it's going to need God to usher in and go, okay, you know, you had your time, here we go. Let me complete this for you. I just like all of these images of play because I would say to you tonight, this summer, there are ways that you can play and do life that are good, and there are ways that you play and do life that are bad. You see what I mean? There are ways to do life that foreshadow the end, and there are ways of doing life that don't connect with reality. And friends, when you rest, when you play this summer, there is this liberation in that. Like, it is a revolt against all the evil plays of oppressors and regimes and exploiters. Like the rest of the world would put you in its mode and say, work, produce, you know, keep part of this rat race in the machine and keep producing, keep making. And when you rest, when you take Sabbath, when you play, it's a revolt and a resistance against the system of this world. And it's saying there is a resurrection and there is a new creation and I'm not going to bring it about. And so there is an ease to that. It's a, we could say, a preview of coming attractions. When you play, it's a preview of coming attractions. And it's a gift that reminds you of the one who keeps on giving to you. So let me ask you this. In what ways have you turned and become like a little child? Like that's one of those things too. We talked about how the church sometimes delineate, like this is holy, this is mature, this is what a person who looks like that follows Jesus And a lot of times that doesn't include play and rest, right? I don't hear this talked about enough, I think, in the church. Like, being a mature follower of Jesus means being like a little child. In what ways have we turned and become like little children? Which I think Jesus would say to you, as all those other things are important that we talk about, you and I have to learn how to play blissfully, creatively, and obliviously like a child. That's all part of this kingdom life. And when you do, I stinking love this picture, you showcase the Creator. When you play like a little child, you showcase the Creator who made everything big and small and delighted in it. Heavenly Father, we are thankful because we read other creation stories and we see other people's belief process. And to us, it sounds like this harsh God who makes demands, and we're always groveling in our sin. And we love this image that you are a playful Father with the Son and the Holy Spirit, and you played in the beginning, and you made us for play, and when we turned our backs, you would not let us play this game of hide and seek, but you played the game of seek and save the lost. And then you invite us once again into this idea of kingdom play, of letting our own backyards become this garden where we stroll through God, through the difficulty, through the obstacles, and through all the opportunities. And we're thankful that you have created us, like right built into the creation order. It's not just about work and producing, but it's about being. It's about resting. It's about slowing down. It's about celebrating and receiving those gifts. And so we want to remember this side. And so we ask this summer, make us like little children. Even like just as we study through these images, through the words we say, through reconnecting with the joys that we have in certain aspects of life, let us become like little children in awe and wonder. And let us, with our freedom and ease, then showcase to the world our Creator who takes such great delight in us. And it is in your great name we pray. Amen.